Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Show. Hey, Brian, what do we have this week?
Hey, Rosh. We have two topics, that one that leads into the other. We're going to talk about the concept of fake it until you make it, and then leading into imposter syndrome. And I've got a question for you about your early stages of your career. So okay. What do you have going on?
Well, I have one thing this week that will be divided into three parts. There was a new study that relatively new that was released. They do this every year, and it's basically benchmarks for Google, Microsoft advertising, search advertising, and click-through rates, conversion rates, acquisition rates. And I'm going to divide those up, talk about them, and maybe we can talk about the importance of them. And I'd like to hear, you know, what you think about that stuff on the social side too, because I think people will find that valuable because they really have different click-through rates and acquisition rates, and because it's a different type of advertising, search versus social. So maybe a little conversation about that.
Great.
So what do you got with yours first?
All right. So talking first, when we're talking about the concept of fake it till you make it. Now this concept, it's a little bit controversial, and sometimes, you know, when perceived the wrong way, it can certainly be, you know, not the right way to do business. But I'm talking at a very, very base level of when you're trying to transition from your hobby into your career. So this is very much geared towards the creative entrepreneur who's trying to make a business out of what they're doing, whether or not they're doing something creative or they're just, you know, getting into the world of business. But a lot of people, when they're starting a new business, they are transitioning from a hobby into a career. And one of those first steps to really make it out there is you have to fake it until you make it. And sometimes that faking it isn't faking your technical skills or isn't faking, you know, your background, but it's more faking your confidence of being out there and maybe not letting everybody know that you're, you know, as much of a rookie at this as you really are. Oftentimes that, faking it will help with some, you know, social anxiety, stuff like that, where maybe you feel inadequate in a situation. And, you know, really my advice for that is, you know, if you are doing that and you're looking for that confidence when you're first transitioning from a hobby to a career, is maybe the first few people that you work with, whether they're somebody that you know, or maybe you reduce your charges heavily or even do something for free. You know, if you're doing this work, and, you know, I'm not always the biggest fan of, you know, giving away your work for free, but if you are trying to make it in a new career, maybe you need to do a few things first time, you know, pro bono, really get that experience under your belt. So that way you don't feel like you're faking it. Yeah. So, and then once you are proven and once you have done it for a bit, you're no longer faking it. You are specialized in that area. You are better than most. You know, another thing to think about when we're talking to the creative entrepreneur is, you know, when it is, say, if you're in the area of art, art oftentimes is very subjective. And, you know, it's sometimes it's the confidence of the artist and how they deliver it and how they're showing off their talent that, you know, will make them make it, because they're portraying that confidence. And then, you know, the art will hopefully carry through. And because it's subjective, you know, sometimes it's how it's delivered, that it's how it's received. I mean, you being, you know, very much somebody I consider, Rosh, an artist, being a high-level photographer, you know, what are some of your thoughts on this concept?
No, I totally agree. I think about teaching and speaking is an area where I did that early on when I first started standing up in front of audiences. It was exactly that. I had to tell myself, I'm the expert. And it's true with any situation. And even with some, when I started my photography career, I started going into new, say, higher level advertising. And I started meeting with art directors and at big agencies, you know, and they're checking me out. I did more preparation. And sometimes I think a little more preparation will help you in that process. Just don't wing it. Take the time, get to know what's going to happen, what should happen, and just tell yourself, look, I am the expert. They're hiring me for a reason. Yeah. They saw something. And maybe a lot of times, quite honestly, to your point, it is personality. It is that confidence of who you are and what you're doing that will get you through. And I think you're absolutely right. You have to prepare. But sometimes you have to fake it. The faking is not your ability, as to your point. The faking is your confidence. You're faking that you have confidence sometimes, and that's okay. And that is just fine. Just go through the process, and the more you do it, better you are.
Yeah, the talent and the research that you're bringing to the table is proof that you're not faking it, and you have to remind yourself of that. So fake the confidence if you don't have it, but the rest of it, you're not faking. So you will make it as long as you portray it the right way.
Yeah, yeah. And believe me, I've gotten many jobs that maybe I wouldn't have if I – and, you know, one thing I had thought of when you were talking about this is that – one thing that speakers do, and this is a great example, because a lot of times people feel like, oh, I shouldn't be up here, and it's very related. And look, a lot of times you are presenting when you're in front of a group of people doing work or something like that, and you're presenting your craft. But sometimes when you're speaking, you'll hear people who say, you know, I'm not a regular speaker. I mean, they lay out all the reasons why they're going to do a horrible job, and no. You keep that to yourself. Don't say, oh, I woke up with a bad day, headache. And, you know, in other words, you're setting poor expectations for that talk. One of the best things you can do at the beginning of your, if it's photography or another craft that you're presenting or working with clients, is set up those expectations and tell them what's going to happen. And even explain, hey, we're going to have a great time doing this. And kind of set their mood with your words. It can be really powerful.
Yeah, it's all how you're driving it. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll throw back to your way. We're talking benchmarks.
I got this over at Search Engine Journal. So if you want to read more about it, they released a regular update about the benchmarks for Microsoft and Google. And we'll start with click-through rate. Click-through rate is if your ad shows 100 times, how many times was it clicked by people? So if it was shown, which each time it's shown is an impression, and if, say, three people click it, that's a 3% click-through rate. The average benchmark for search ads for the main search, this would be Yahoo, Microsoft, Google, in a combination is 3 to 5%. However, I'm looking at the, and that's industries overall, but they also have a number of benchmarks within different industries. So for example, animals and pets, the average click-through rate is 13.41%. Furniture, 2.57. Physicians, 13. So medical is high. Real estate, 2.88. So it's all over the board, and it's important for you to know it really does depend on your industry. And a click-through rate really is something to keep eye on because it's a measurement for you to improve. Don't worry about what everybody else is. If you look at these graphs that they're offering, again, they're all over the place. Find out where you are. I always considered in search in the earlier days of Google that, you know, if it's under 1%, I was failing. So I definitely want to. But again, it depends if it's a display ad. A display ad's going to be much lower, but for search, you definitely want to be over 1%. It was rare for it to get much over 4 and 5% across the industries I was working with at the time. But today, the algorithms are so much better. They can put the ads in front of the right people much better. So it's very common from at least my clients to have a 5 to 10% click-through rate and higher regularly. So again, depending on the industry, what about you, Brian? What do you find? How does that work in the social world?
Very much. It's hard for me to guarantee a new prospective client exactly what kind of click rates or cost per click that we're going to see because it does vary so much from industry to industry. For example, you know, one of my escape room clients. You know, that those ads are bound to get people to click to check out their website. And then what I often do is I kind of figure out with my clients just how many website visitors it takes to get a conversion and on average. And, you know, what we figured out with like is something like an escape room where, you know, it's an evening event, you know, maybe somebody will spend, $100 or so. So we realized it was about 80 to 100 visitors to the website for someone to then book and go through, which is that's a decent number. Mm-hmm. But yet, some of my other clients that I'll help are in, like, say, the law or mortgage field. You know, it takes hundreds to thousands of visitors to, you know, follow through on something that's big, like a lawsuit or a mortgage or something like that. So again, a completely different industry. And you think about, you know, just how frequently somebody might book an escape room versus how often somebody has to go through with a lawsuit. So you can't, you know, it's all apples, oranges, and peaches, pretty much. You know, it's hard to really make fair comparisons. You know, I know with my benchmarks that I look for, you know, the quantity of reaches per, you know, number of people that are reached per what we're spending, and then also our cost per click. And, you know, I try to keep that in a certain world where we're, you know, around 30 to 50 cents per click or something like that. And I'm able to give a realistic expectation of a benchmark, but again, I have to curtail it to the industry.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about click-through rates, cost per click in a moment, because that's where you see the big difference between social and search. So we'll get into that in a moment. But your next topic, Brian, what do you got?
Okay, cool. Yeah. So going from fake it till you make it into the natural next step, which is imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I read an interesting research survey of neurosurgeons. And so these are the people that need to be as confident in their job as possible. So these were neurosurgeons and neurosurgeon trainees. And there was over 1,000 of them polled, and nearly 70 to 80% of them said that they experience imposter syndrome in their job.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of really opened my eyes, because those are the people where you want to know that they're doing what they're doing. But you know what? They're neurosurgeons. They're very smart. They've made it very far. I'm going to trust them with brain surgery above anybody else.
Yeah, right.
So that what I'm trying to say to people here is that the imposter syndrome is natural. It's just a part of the human psyche. It's what we do. And what we need to realize is that all of our experience, every job that we've done, or every, you know, creation that we've made when it was a hobby, is something that somebody else hasn't done. And you're often being hired by that person because they haven't done it and they have no interest in doing it at all. Whether you're making a beautiful oil painting that you've been commissioned, or you're setting up a Facebook ad, or you're setting up a, you know, a SEO
design, you know, you're designing something, you know, they chances are they've seen your work, you know? So again, back to that whole, you know, you're the expert and they look at you that way.
Yeah. So it's natural for us to feel it if neurosurgeons are feeling it, but realistically you're being hired because somebody else doesn't want to do it. They don't have the experience that you have. You know, maybe they could have the talent to do it, but at the bottom line, you know, talent is nothing unless you have the effort behind it. So you're the one putting in the effort. You're the one with the talent. So you're the one who is doing it. You're the one who's been hired. And I just implore people to fight through that imposter syndrome. Believe in yourself that you are bringing, you know, a product. And then just some other things to kind of, you know, some advice for people that if you are feeling this imposter syndrome, first of all, make reasonable expectations for yourself. You know, not everybody's going to paint a Mona Lisa. Not everybody's going to have, you know, just the perfect Google ad that's, you know, getting 90% click-through rates. And when you fail, be kind to yourself. Don't quit and use that failure. You know, think of, you know, the Kobe Bryant method. You know, he's like, I didn't win or lose any games. I just got better. And, you know, that's what he looked at every competition. So every piece of art you've created, every song you've written, or every ad campaign you put up, learn from it. And the failure is not final. It's okay. Learn from it, move on. And you're that much better than you were the time before. So that imposter syndrome should be that much more gone.
Yeah. And very good. So, you know. Yeah. I think you said it all. I mean, there's not much for me to comment on. I think we all have had it I think even to your point, you know, just get a little bit better every time and know that you have with each bit of experience. Very good.
Perfect.
Good stuff.
All right, cool.
Yeah. So our next topic is the cost per click. Yes. Going back to a technical world, you know, the average cost per click is probably in search $2 to $3. Now I'm looking at some of these where it's a arts and entertainment, that $1.55 per click. A lot of times it's tough for creatives to get their head around what they need to do. Now, if you're an attorney, we're talking $10 per click. I have some clients who are paying $10 to $15 to $20 per click. But the point being is that it's worth it. The ROI, return on investment. So you need to know, one, what is your return? You know, what is it that you need to make? And how much does it cost? How much can, you know, is it worth it? Sometimes it just isn't worth it. Search, I have recommended to people, look, your service is $50. Your product is $50 or $25 or even $75. I will often say, look, if your product or service is over $250, you can go search. If it's less than that, it's going to really depend on the industry. We're going to have to test, but most of the time it doesn't work. A lot of the clients who do best are the ones that have $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $50,000. You know, we have clients that, you know, $1 million come out of it if it goes right. The point being here, the average around $2 to $3, but it can go all over the place. But I know that's much different for social media. You're a lot less. But here's the difference, and I want you to comment on this, Brian, is that search, when people are searching, they're buyers. They have a problem that they're trying to solve. So if you have a service that people would search for the person who can provide the answer to their problem, then search is great. But sometimes people don't know they have a problem, and so you need to use display. You need to go find them and let them know they have a problem or something of value, and that's where we go to you. And then we start looking in display ads. We, of course, can do that in Google, but it's very efficient and very uncanny, especially in the world of Facebook, how they find those people. You know, maybe talk a little bit about that and the cost per click in that arena.
Yeah, that's, I think, a really good topic to mention, because I feel like it's why our two companies are such a good 1-2 punch. I always explain to clients that there are active potential customers and there are passive potential customers.
Right.
The active customer is that person going to Google, hey, I need a roof, I need painting, I need something. And they're looking for the, you know, closest company that has good ratings, so on and so forth. On the other half of that, on your social side, you are cultivating the passive client. So really, this is the modern day billboard principle. You know, nobody goes driving on a certain road because they're looking for a certain billboard. Think about it that way. But they're getting in the car and driving, and you have a chance to get their attention. That's where, you know, social needs to be a little different in how it's messaged, and you are, first of all, creating the problem for them and then showing the answer. Whereas on search, you know, you're just showing the answer.
Right.
So that being said, we need to get a lot more clicks to get conversions on the social side. You know, you need to get, you know, say if you had 10 people who are interested in a product click through, chances are, you know, two or three of them are going to convert because they're already interested in that product. I might need 10 times more than that. I might need 100 people to come through. Like I just said, you know, previously, 80 visitors to the escape room website to have them actually book an escape room.
Right.
So, you know, that's 79 people that now I've planted the seed in the back of their head about it. And over time, that might convert as opposed to, you know, active. So that's why that cost.
Which is still a decent conversion rate. And, you know, you have 80 people that go there on average. That's still better than 1% conversion rate. And I often consider the target 1%, 2 is great. Again, go back to what we've been saying, depending on the industry, depending on what it is, how many factors from price to desire to demand, all those factors come into play.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, granted, you're grabbing the lowest hanging fruit by catching them on the search side, but I'm looking to, you know, get some of that fruit a little lower.
Yeah.
on social.
Well, I mean, lowest hanging fruit, because these are, again, buyers. So there's more competition for those buyers, because we all know. So it costs more. It costs more. And in doing that calculation, knowing that, you know, for your client, it takes 80 visitors on average, that's important information. And that's the kind of information you need to do. And a lot of creative people love, you know, what they do. They love to create, they love to design, they love to code, you know, whatever it is they're making. But once they have their invention, their creation, or their service, the marketing side isn't necessarily their strong suit. And so it's important to have that plan around it. You know, they can do that. You can test. But one thing I would suggest for everyone is to have a budget that's not going to kill you, but be consistent over time. Don't ever just say, hey, let me throw $50 at it and see what happens. Because all you're doing is giving Facebook and Google $50 and you're going to get nothing out of it. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. You really say, hey, I'm going to give so much, even if it is only a few hundred dollars each month for 6 months. Yeah. And get better at it every month and see what happens that way. That's the better way to go. And then maybe after 6 months, you're not able to do it, then either try a different method or maybe hire a professional, make decisions from there and decide. Because again, you may not want to do that. So even if you're hiring a professional, stick with it for a period of time. Hire that professional. Don't say, oh, we did it for a month and didn't work. Yeah. Have a plan with them. Say, look, I'm with you for 6 months. Prove that you can bring me new business.
Right. And that's why even when we sign on clients, we say, hey, a minimum of 3 months to get the ball rolling, get some momentum so we can learn a little bit. And, you know, you've gotten to see over the years where we've worked together on our caricature artist client, just, you know, seeing the clicks go up, the cost per click go down. We're learning, we're getting better. You know, we've had some months where it's been almost as cheap as 10 cents a click. So, I mean,
it's amazing. Over time, it just gets better. And the algorithms get to know you.
Yep.
And the algorithms get to know your client and get to know what is right for you. And so once they know who your customer is, your ideal customer, it goes out and looks for more that have the similar profile. But sometimes it takes a while to get to that point. All right. Hey, let me finish up here with this last one, which is the average cost per lead, which again is kind of what we've been talking about. So for your client, you know, how much was it to get 80 visitors to that website for that one lead? You need to know that cost. Now, for search, obviously, it's a lot more expensive. You get to the attorneys. It says here, it says $111, career and employment, $132. Per lead, isn't necessarily a sale. That's just somebody inquiring. So it could be two or three. You know, it depends if you what your close rate is. So if your close rate is 50%, well, then for career and employment, it's going to be $260, for example. If your close rate's lower than that, you close one out of four, then obviously you have to figure that out. I see the numbers here in some, you know, animals and pets. See, I think I want to go into the animals and pets industry because they have it's $23 per lead and the cost is low, but, you know, others again are much higher. And it's important to know what those costs per lead, but also the total cost per acquisition. And again, sometimes if it could be $1,000. And you have to know what that ROI is, and you really have to just have a good look at the data. And I know not everybody in the creative world wants to look at data, but have some benchmarks. And that's what this is. These are benchmarks for you. Here's the plan. This is how much I can reasonably afford. And then find the tools that fit within the plan that can actually prove themselves. The hardest part in all of this is getting that first sale. Mm-hmm. Once you get that first sale, the first sale through Google, the first sale through Yahoo or Microsoft or through a YouTube ad or through Facebook or Instagram, once you get the first sale, now you have something to work with. You can look at how much time did it take? How much money did I spend? What was needed? And then you can review whatever those numbers are and say, okay, now what can I do a little bit better to improve that? Back to your conversation about, you know, being the expert in imposter syndrome. What do we have in those situations? You just have to look at what happened. How can I improve and be a little bit better next time? So the hardest part is getting that first gig. And that's true even offline. You know, how many networking events did I have to go to get a sale and really measure that. So anyway, I thought this was really nice. You can find all the information. There's more data over at Search Engine Journal. Again, this is Local IQ who put this together. Sometimes it's nice just kind of go through the numbers and see what the benchmarks are in other industries and what's standard. And right. Yes, compare yourself to them, but don't compare yourself to them. You know, compare yourself to you.
All right. I have one question for you that goes back to my, you know, fake it till you make it, imposter syndrome topics today. When was that moment back, you know, way back when, being an early photographer, that you decided to transition from a hobby into a career?
Great question. That would have been high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My dad had a dark room. And I enjoyed it. I'm in Montana right now, and I would go out to Montana with my dad's camera, come out here. I would photograph, and I really enjoyed it. And when I got to high school, we had a really good high school program and a great instructor. I ended up in the top 20 in the nation as a young photographer through Scholastics at the time, and won a lot of awards. And I knew that was it. I knew when I was in high school that that was going to be it. And so I went to school for photography, and it was never a question. It was just, cool. You know, the process, but I also had the business side. And so that was important. Of course, it was kind of a conflict in art school, being a business-minded person. But anyway, you know, it was an experience. But I did graduate. I was very happy I graduated, got my degree in photography, and went right into the media from there.
Very cool. Yeah, it's one of those classic, you know, you found your passion, found it at a young age, and chased it and had your, you know, your blinders on towards that,
yeah,
that world.
Absolutely.
And that's great. And, you know, I'm always happy when I hear those stories, but also I like hearing about the late bloomers too. You know, when I graduated high school and first, you know, went to college, social media management was not a career that existed because social media didn't really exist. So, you know, it's all about whenever we find our passion, but that's cool. It's good. It's good to hear.
I just had a lunch with a gentleman who just left teaching and is going into photography. Had a great conversation with him. He's been doing it for a couple of years now. It was great to support him in that process. You know, I've always had that entrepreneur side. So I love entrepreneurship, and I have a lot of things that have been going on over all my years of being involved, but photography has always been a core. And, you know, there's nothing like having a good creative outlet. There's also the downside of having your creative outlet be your source of income. There really is a downside to that, and you can get a little jaded by that when it's not, especially in the beginning days, providing what you hope it would, and you struggle to continue to do. Sometimes some of the things you love, you just want to continue to love them, so don't make them a career.
Yeah, when something you love suddenly feels like work, it's a very confusing thing.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting you shouldn't do a creative career, but maybe there's something on the side that maybe you think, oh, maybe I'll add this to my career. Well, think about it. Think about it. You know, having a creative career is just a blessing, and that it's amazing. And I wish it upon everyone to have that creative outlet. It's much better than here in Detroit. You know, doing the working the line in the latest automotive factory is it's a different animal than what we do. So that's, I guess, what I've been trying to avoid with desperation.
I guess that wraps into a good conclusion for us, because, you know, we're here preaching it, we're talking about it, and we encourage people to be creative entrepreneurs. And that's why we're here talking every week, is to give our best advice to the creative entrepreneur that's out there.